Good morning. It's March. It's amazing that it's March. And
March 8th, to be exact.
March 8th, yeah. The title for the month, the overall topic, is The Mysteries of Mind. And next Sunday, we will hear about what frees or enslaves the mind. Sunday mornings, of course, the doors open at 10:30. Meetings are 11 till noon. On Wednesday evenings, we're currently studying in the Ocean of Theosophy. And we forget what chapter we're on, but we're talking about karma.
Kamaloka.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And doors open at 5:15. The reference library is open till 7:15, and the meeting runs from 7:30 until 8:30. Next Saturday, and these are on the book table, if you want to take one home as a reminder or to share with others, we have a forum on a theosophical approach to everyday ethics. And it's from 1 to 4 p.m. right here. Of course, it's a free meeting, and there'll be presentations of different ideas about ethics. The basis of what we do is a union of the same principle that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. So you will find this idea in every ULT, although each is autonomous. And we consider, as a theosophist, anyone who's in the service of humanity in whatsoever form they choose to take. We have no bylaws. We are not involved in race or creed or religion or sex. None of that matters. We come together to discuss these ideas as associates and contribute what we can in the way of time or money to keeping the doors open, because it is a public building and everything here is free because these ideas are your birthright. So this morning's topic is conscious and subconscious mind, and we'll be starting with conscious mind. And we have to begin with, where does conscious mind emanate? Mr. Crosby tells us, it is indeed the supreme which lies within and behind every being. Every being of every kind in the universe is, in its innermost essence, a ray from and one with it. It is life, it is spirit, it is consciousness. So no matter where we are in the evolutionary chain, and man currently stands at the top, that consciousness is part of our essence, part of our being. It's a reflection of or a ray from that universal divine oneness. That itself is consciousness. The life in each of us is the universal life. We are sparks of the one spirit, the one consciousness. So whether it is striking two rocks together and getting a spark, or a plant of some kind following the trek of the light through the day, and turning itself so that it's in a different position at the end of the day than it was when the light began, or whether it's displayed as instinct in the animal kingdom where hunting is done for survival and for no other reason, that is consciousness. The difference being, man is self-aware, therefore self-conscious. He can look and say, I am. And we can all do that. But that self-consciousness took place at a pivotal point in our evolution when the form, human form was ready, but mind was not yet active. And it is said that those with more perfected knowledge and more experience turned to light a candle, one flame lighting many, and mind became self-conscious in the human. So what is consciousness? We could say it's awareness. We can call it a state of being. We can call it mind in action, which is really today's title. Consciousness never ceases, no matter on what plane we are acting, and we'll hear more of that in the second half. So we ask ourselves, what are we aware of? What are we using this spiritual power for? And for the most part, we're aware of what we see with our eyes and what we hear, and looking at one another and seeing differences instead of similarities. We are binding ourselves to this terrestrial plane, where consciousness should be used in a much higher, more altruistic way to look at another deep in the eyes and understand that is a soul in evolution as I am. And as we begin to change our consciousness, we have a tremendous effect on everything around us, particularly the lower kingdoms. And we say lower in relation to where we stand. So as we grow and use mind and waken our consciousness, we help lift up and awaken all of life. And that is our responsibility as the evolutionary position we stand in. It's called the pivotal point where we can turn and help as we were helped. So we're told realization takes place through the mind. We are thinkers, observing our actions and seeking to do better. Now, the Gita reminds us that attachment to objects of sense holds back our natural evolution. The quote is, "He who, free from attachment or repulsion for objects, experienceth them through the senses and organs with his heart obedient to his will, attains to tranquility of thought." His heart obedient to his will. Certainly a higher use of consciousness. And the desire there is one of a different sort than we normally have in this life. It's a desire to be of help, to free ourselves from that which we believe is real and seek within that which is real. So that statement is really an expression of equal-mindedness or higher consciousness. So we have to check our desires. That's where it all begins. Our aspirations, our thoughts for what we will do each day, each minute. And if we can color those with a higher feeling and a more spiritual intent, we will be on the right path. And Mr. Crosby tells us when that happens, when our desire or aspiration is unselfish, noble, universal, then the force which flows through the individual is grand, noble, and universal in its character. So we get help. This is the equal-mindedness. We put forward the right desire, and all of the universe comes forth to, as a force to help us make that desire a reality, and especially at this time of year, the beginning of the year. And true knowledge, then, has to be gained through an increasing perception of the universality of all law and the universal line of progress for every being of whatever grade. We have to think. We have to use the mind to practice altruism before the higher powers of the universe can be placed in our possession for our use. So we have the responsibility to seek to make consciousness a living, breathing awareness. And again, the universe responds with our ability to use higher spiritual powers because we're using them in the right way. So finally, from the Gita, the accepted fact that each human being is an immortal spirit, soul, mind leads to consideration of many levels of psychic and spiritual perception. The inner immortal is the one consciousness, which perceives through all the states and planes of a being's nature and serves to uphold the memory of experiences in those states. So now we'll hear about the subconscious mind.
Are you awake?
Are you awake?
Are you awake? Well, if you're awake, you're using your conscious mind at the moment. However, your subconscious mind is on alert. And it is always on alert because our body operates through the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind learns not by logic, but by repetition. And so it becomes a storehouse of our life. From the moment we begin experiencing life on this plane. And it takes in as much as it possibly can. And we are told that on this plane on which we live, everything is septenary. So when we are born, our consciousness perceives the entire environment, everything, and it stores it. And it's like what do they call in a computer? It's a bank of information, a bank of experience. It's what oftentimes float back up into our consciousness. And where did that come from? What is that all about? But something in the environment triggered. Either it was a smell, either it was a touch, a smell, your five senses are just means of communication. And the subconscious mind tabulates and holds all of this information. Now, so what is it that we perceive? We can only perceive what is on this plane on which we live. And this plane is the fourth plane of matter. We're at our deepest point in evolution. And we are divine beings encased in animal forms and struggling to have that light shine through these forms. Now, that light or that consciousness is simply, as was stated, is a consciousness that is not narrow, but is broad. And that everything that we see is on its fourth plane. of material substance. And we have fire, air, water, and earth. We have all those elements. We can see them. We can touch them. But the fifth element is beginning to appear. Well, it's here already. We just can't perceive it. It's just a subtler form of matter. Because we are evolving. We are being drawn back into that which we are. So, as we have descended into matter, we have gathered these gross forms. And by gathering these gross forms around us, the subconscious mind is able to impress all that it comes in contact with. And it uses it. And the ultimate use of it are these bodies in which we inhabit. So the subconscious mind is a very intricate part of who we are. So many get stuck in their subconscious. They're holding things back. They don't want to look at something. Or something happens and they hide their emotions. They hide themselves. All this is just past things that we have perceived. And therefore, in some way, we made it a belief. We believe that bigger people who yell at you will hurt you. But we get these beliefs. And we carry these beliefs all through life. And our subconscious mind protects what we believe. It always is questioning. So if you come upon anything that upsets or contradicts those beliefs which you have gathered through all of your life experiences, you react. Your body reacts emotionally. Fear, criticism. But it creates an emotion. And like we're all plugged into that. We have become a container of experience. However, if it is not expressed and let it go, rather than taking it and saying, oh, that's mine. That's part of me. That's who I am. It's this letting go. And your subconscious mind and your conscious mind can work in harmony through concentration. But that's a topic for another time. But in Sundays past, we had given a lecture, in fact, or a talk on the brain, the cerebrum and cerebellum. Well, while one's inactive, the other one is active. But that subconscious, whichever one it is always awake in some form. It's always on alert. The conscious mind is but the gatekeeper, what it lets in. I'll ask the question again. Are you awake?
Barely, but I'm tuned in enough to pose this question. Why is it that we are so focused on the material plane, on satisfying our animal desires, not only consciously, but we think we're trained to subconsciously think about that, you know, success, fame, glory, whatever you want to call it, but all kind of separatist, clawing ourselves to the top. top of the heap. It's just, it's so pervasive. And how do we, you know, what do we do about that? How do we combat that? It seems like it's an army, that there's an army against us, and we're standing there as a student of theosophy. We're trying to push back that tide. But why? Why are we so overwhelmed with it all?
Why are you attached to it?
Me, personally? Or in general?
No, him over here. No, you attached. Why does it bother you? What is it that is causing the conflict?
Because I know that there's something better. That it's all separate. And we're all one brotherhood. We're all one.
Yes, we have that idea. But the reality is we live on a fourth plane where everything is material. And we have identified with the material. And everything that is real is what we see or what other people see that give us value in this world. But if you come to these rooms, you find that these kind of things are of no value because they are not real. They're changing and transitory. That there's something that is eternal within us that is real, and we need to spend time with that aspect of ourselves because that aspect doesn't die. It lives from life to life through eternity. Through eternity. So we would think that becoming aware that we are eternal beings encased in these animal bodies, how do we free it? How do we let it express itself? Because all the answers are there. I mean, we come here, we only brush the surface. We say, ooh, there's gold here. There's gold, but what's this writing say? What does that mean? You know, it's something we have to learn to think again. So we shouldn't be frightened.
And one thing we would add, the question being, we have all these ideas and these attachments. What can we do about them? The first step would seem to be we have to ask ourselves, where did they come from? Is this my own discovery that I have found to be true? Or is this something that is the wave of this world that we live in and I have drunk the Kool-Aid, as it were? No disrespect. It literally is the mind having to sift through, as was said, the real from the unreal. And that would be the first step. And what we are left with, as was said, railing against it is the first step. Realizing it is not truth, it is not helpful, it is not my idea, it's something I swallowed at some point because I heard it enough times. So from that point forward, then, we can spend our time with the ideas that are helpful and altruistic, and those that consciousness will help lift up all of life.
Well, we just would like to present an example that just happened. The word Kool-Aid was used as an expression of something. But the first thing that came into our mind was a tragedy. A tragedy. And that's our subconscious mind saying, whoa. Is that what is being meant by that? Or we begin to try to digest it and to understand it and to make some kind of sense of it in the back.
Before we get back to the point of the discussion, you keep tapping your fingers on the table, and you may not realize this, but our Sunday morning meetings go out all over the world and we get letters back saying how much they appreciate it, well, they're going to hear your tap, tap, tap. So, yeah, don't do that. Thank you.
One second. We have accomplished great things up here. We have stopped biting our fingernails, so we're just doing this and trying to, you know, it's a new experience.
Sorry.
Had to do it.
The fact is that our science and our religion are both very materialistic. But theosophy tells us this is a transition age. So how should we act in a transition age? We should talk these ideas out, question people. That's like our forum on moral decisions. How do you make moral decisions? Not on the basis of our science or religion. You need to understand that you and everyone else is an enduring soul. So you can relax about the world and try to help it.
Sound advice. In the corner.
To go along with
the other corner.
To go along with that, philosophy tells us this is the Dark Ages, Kali Yuga, which is a very dense, materialistic period in our evolution. So we think that by knowing that, and we can make greater strides in overcoming the materialism that is so rampant now. But, you know, as all the comments were saying, we have to look inside and try and detach ourselves and be, be on the lookout and be able to determine what is the materialistic side and what is the more spiritual side, and try and cultivate it.
I think you should be happy. No, really, be happy. It's one's attitude that determines the day. It's your attitude. And whatever it is, whatever day it is, or whatever period we are going through, well, that's maybe the mass of people. But we are told, come ye out and be ye separate. I don't want to be separate. I want to be with my family and friends. No, but be a light. One that is not cast to and fro in this ocean, but has a steady ground.
And one of the reason we are here in these bodies at this time is these are the perfect set of circumstances for our opportunities to do what was just described. So there isn't a formula, there isn't something that you can write down and be saved, quote unquote. It's a step-by-step process that we're weeding out the wrong ideas, and the opportunity is, especially with this material, to rethink, to question, to do that work that needs to be done, the clearing out. And then, as we think it's Mr. Crosby that says, when you are working on old habits, you don't think about the old furniture that's going to go in the new house, you think about the new furniture. So the old furniture needs to be let go of in order to take the next step.
The moving truck's out front.
We're not ready.
Is the purpose and therefore the ultimate goal of our evolution to make what is now subconscious to us conscious? Is that why we're here?
Is that why we're here?
Is that our purpose in evolution?
Part of the purpose of why we're here is to make the subconscious mind part of the conscious mind. Is that what the question is?
Yes.
we wouldn't say our purpose to be here is to do that. I think we should do that in a sense of being able to train the mind. Okay? But the mind is something that we control. When I say we, I mean us or that in each of us. That which makes a decision, says yes or no.
But part of the answer is to eventually arrive at the goal of perfectibility, where we are completely conscious on all planes of being. That's the highest expression, shall we say, in this period of evolution. The adepts, the Mahatmas, they are completely conscious on all planes, so everything has blended, in a sense.
So the fact is that there are seven planes of consciousness, and we only operate on one. And by perfecting, it's not so much as us doing something, it's working for the betterment of life, and that is expressed to us personally.
I think that partially answers the question why, if we're awake, obviously we're relatively awake, why couldn't the title be conscious and unconscious mind? What is the significance of the term subconscious as opposed to unconscious mind? Because very often in the popular psychology we hear the term the unconscious person.
When looking at that, you know, Freud and other psychologists use different terms. And it's not unconscious in the sense that there is nothing that's unconscious. You know, it's just that it's either it's active or it's sleeping, that consciousness, or resting, or, you know. So that, well.
We're thinking, I'm sorry.
I was thinking too, but I couldn't get it out.
We're thinking about the point where mind is lit up. We are told in the philosophy, mind is not completely lit up. There is a portion of it that from that moment on begins to work, to expand and finally get complete realization. But it is forever conscious to a certain degree. So there really isn't anything as unconsciousness on any plane. We're told everything is consciousness. It is that reflection of that divine unity.
And one other comment is that everything is septenary. Consciousness is septenary, and it's said in the Hindu cosmology that we're in the fourth round. The fifth race and the fifth sub-race of the fifth race. Now, if we know our understanding of numbers, five has a correspondence all throughout these teachings. And it's mind. Mind is awakening. And we see it here. It is awakening from its long slumber. Calm down for a minute. Take control.
Okay. Yes.
There are many people who say that the majority of humanity, you had earlier when you had said, are you awake? There are many who say that the majority of humanity moves through this life in a sleep
dream
stage. And they point as evidence to only a small portion of the brain being used. Did you find anything that, in your research for this talk, did you find anything that reflects on that?
the fact that so many of us are walking around partially asleep. We're told in the voice of the silence, there are three basic states of consciousness, which are the waking, jagrata, the dreaming, swapna, and the deep sleeping state, which is sushupti. And we give you the terms in, what is the language?
Sanskrit,
thank you, to become familiar with. But that consciousness moving through those different states has a more or less awakened condition. Now, we know we had the after-death states last Wednesday, and it was said most of us go through, or a portion of us go through, the beginning sort of in a dream because there wasn't enough life to slough off in the first, second stage. How awake we are and how we are using what we have, we would say a lot of humanity is awake, but awake to its personal selfish desires, as opposed to using those powers differently.
So. Many Buddhist monks would say that that most Western souls are immature or not awake, and that meaning that they're not awake to their true nature. And identify with that true nature. So in that sense, many are asleep and partially waking up. Some are awake. But there's consciousness runs, is infinite. It's boundless. So mind is ever present in this universe, and it exists for one reason, for the experience of the soul.
Yes, in the
and that takes us back to the earlier point about self-conscious. We should remember that mind is always the incarnation of a spiritual being into the highest form on that planet, whatever it is. So you have only a partial incarnation because the form cannot handle us as spiritual thinkers. We have created and worked on this form, and we've made it, well, reduced and ridiculous. So what do we do with the subconscious? Well, we don't want it to start controlling our heartbeat or any of the other automatic processes, but we want to control the ideas that become the impulse that direct us away from the higher ideas. So it's a balancing act. We have to use discernment and discrimination and weigh and think before we act, or if we can't do that, at least look at it after we act.
We need to be having that conversation all the time, all through the day. What are we paying attention to? What is it going on around us that we just don't pay attention to?
There are opportunities everywhere, here and then there. Yes?
You mentioned that the adepts and like mahatmas and people of that nature are perceiving different dimensions or the full expression of everything. Is that because they've used, are they fully using their subconscious? Or is this a different, or they have access to their soul? That kind of confuses the, that,
right.
that in that regard.
Right. As far as the adepts, and it's an adept is not the same as a mahatma. The mahatma is the highest. No, just giving some theosophy, is the highest expression at this time of a perfected being. So on that path, even that high, there are grades of ability to use these powers. The Mahatma, the highest expression, has the ability, first of all, it doesn't need a body. The comment was made, we're stuck in these forms. The highest expression doesn't need a body, may take one on to do some work, but if you've read the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna shows himself in his essence to Arjuna, Arjuna can't stand the brilliance. He can't look upon it. So the idea being they could take on a vesture or not. They can come and help us if that's what they choose to do. But as far as consciousness and subconsciousness, they have blended all of the states that we are now going through one at a time, or, you know, as we do our work. They have gone before us and done all that work already. So everything is a unity within them. And they are able to see on all planes where we are only able to see on a few at this point in our evolution. Does that make sense?
Well, the subconscious mind is part of the physical body, correct? Is that a piece of it, or does that have to do with the soul and the consciousness coming into it?
Well, the subconscious mind is the storehouse of all experience, all emotions, all ideas, all beliefs.
So it's not just a one life.
Well, in this life, it gathers all that information. This subconscious gathers information from this life. Now, if you're speaking, well, what does it take with it? Well, this is what happens when we die. When we die, it's said that we go through a review of all those experiences, down to the most subtle that we've experienced. We may not have taken notes on it or bear witness to it in the fact that, oh, but it's there. We see it. We see it, even though we don't pay attention to it. We see it. We are divine beings using these bodies to raise up all of life. So our problem, therefore, is that we are shown that there are adepts, there are wise ones that have perfected themselves. There is a path to perfectibility. And HPB pointed out that path. And it's a path that is similar but not the same as other teachers. But they all arrive at the same point.
So if we're all divine beings, the adepts and are basically, Mahamas are basically more advanced divine beings?
Yes, absolutely.
More knowledge, more understanding, more universal. You know, it's said that even the adepts can't go out to like a boundary of pass not, or that they even do not, are not told the secrets to. So, but the reason for this is this is a solemn and sacred knowledge that if it was cast out in the world, it's like casting pearls before swine. They don't know the value of it. So this activity shows or points to how to blend the unconscious and the conscious mind together. By desire, will, concentration, and meditation.
And the really hopeful statement we hear is that those perfected beings have walked where we're walking now. So it shows the possibility for us with work along the same path to have the same result, but it, we can only do it for ourselves. Yes, your hand's been up.
Well, when we look around the room, the auditorium today, we see many different forms of life, human life. Everyone looks different, seems different. But there seems to be a common sense used by all of these different forms and shapes and so forth. And that common sense allows us to cooperate with one another when we know we do possess a commonality. What is that common sense which binds us all together as human beings rather than an animal being who are only concerned about survival?
What is common sense?
The common sense.
The common sense. If we take the words common being agreed upon and sense being knowledge, this would be a reflection of experiences that enough people have had that they can learn from it, point to it, agree upon it. It's what the masters do. They check with one another. They have verified that this is truth. And if there is even one who does not agree, then and has an argument, then something has to be checked again. But the common sense we would think would be the language of the soul, the experiences carried from lifetime to lifetime. And we are all one, so we're going to have every experience there is to have at different times. But we can call on it. We're talking to someone who's upset about something. Perhaps it's something we've gone through. And we say, we understand how you feel. There's a commonality of experience there. And here's what happened with me, if it helps you.
Our subconscious has all that information stored up. And it tells us what makes sense to us. And if we are in harmony with existence and try to work with life rather than oppose it, you know, rather than fight against it, but try to find some kind of harmony, some kind of path of less resistance.
We're told that Metis has a higher aspect and a lower aspect. So that being mind, does the subconscious have a higher and a lower aspect, same as the general category of Metis?
Well, we would think that the subconscious mind learns by repetition, not by logic. So if we become a pianist, if we become a composer, we become a writer, we have our subconscious mind is operating.
Is it operating in the lower or the higher?
Well, anything that goes toward the higher, but you're talking about the animal functions of this body. That's what the subconscious takes. Those things that we don't think about, but it takes care of us. Beats the heart, the lungs, the blood, the tissues, everything. Everything is controlled by this. And it sends signals, alerts, caution, slow down, idiot. So it's always there.
Yes.
So maybe you're moving towards a new vocabulary there, where you're speaking of that which pertains, that's instinctive to our lower nature, to be subconscious, that which we do not know about yet in our minds, because we haven't evolved to that point, where either be super consciousness or divine consciousness, to the extent we know that or don't know that, is what separates us from those perfected human beings referred to.
Yes. Absolutely. It bears repeating, and we'll do our best. The difference between us and those perfected beings is that the level of consciousness, the higher levels being something like super consciousness, is not where we have gotten to yet. That the subconscious actions and mind are of a lower nature, the necessity being to wake it up, as we started with, and become aware.
And we think one of the best exercises that we could do is to read the Secret Doctrine, find a topic that you find fascinating, and sort of go through it and see how it contradicts the beliefs that we have of understanding. Because what it does, it makes us question. It makes us work to understand. So it develops in us a kind of intuition.
Is it a follow-up?
It seems, though, we could question whether our subconscious only relates to the body and senses. For example, we are very much influenced by our superstitions, by our dogmatism. We may believe we are good theosophical students, but still under the influence of our psychic nature, superstition, dogmatism in some way or another. So that's a way in which those subconscious tendencies of our mind still affect us, but they don't have anything to do with the body, per se.
Right.
No, it's our belief. Our belief system, you know, bigotry and prejudice, I'm not that. And then something happens and triggers in us, and that's what is displayed. Because it lies dormant within the subconscious mind, because we haven't dealt with it. And we can deal with it. We can deal with it. If one wants to. If one really wants to clean up his nature, one has to make an effort. And that's done by watching ourselves, watching our thoughts, watching our actions.
Watching our desires. In the very back.
The instinctive mind can't be called higher or lower because it can never make a choice. It only follows direction or impression. Our subconscious mind is literally that, all the ideas I keep buried and don't look at. So maybe one of the things would be to, before an action, is to think, why do I want to do that? Where does that feeling come from? What is this really all about? And if we can't do that, afterwards we can look at it.
Right.
Think before acting. Ha, 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 ha. That seems to be the hardest thing in the world to do. But you can by constant effort and repetition.
And we're told again in one of those quotes, it will only happen if we practice it. And the more we practice, the better we get at it, and the more the universe and spirit responds. Here's a little light that's getting a little brighter. We can work through here. And we find the results to be our teachers if we're not able to handle ourselves in the beginning. But that opportunity will surely present itself again because we haven't conquered it yet. We haven't understood it properly. But the possibility is always there for that to happen, practicing altruism.
Well, just to follow up with that, we're here to clean up our natures. That's why we're here. We don't come back because we are perfected in anything. We come back to learn how to undo that which we have done. And the where we have to start is with the ideas that we hold to be true. You begin there. Change your ideas. You know, well, I changed my ideas 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. Well, how come something didn't happen? How come I'm not changed? Well, if you look, you have changed. Very subtle changes. That big dramatic change, maybe it's in your next life.
There's a fable about the Gordian knot. It was a knot that was, probably everybody's heard of it, but, you know, was tied and couldn't be untied, and the king had people from all over come to try to untie the knot, and then somebody whipped out their sword and cut through it. And we think about all the knots we have in our heart and our mind, and the sword is spiritual knowledge. We're not sure. We were very young when we heard it, so we weren't thinking along those lines then. But
that's exactly right.
That's not funny.
We weren't trying to.
No, that's not.
Oh, I'm not.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You should be.
Spiritual knowledge is what will cut through what is true and what is not true. The chaff from the grain, or the wheat from the chaff, whatever that expression is, very quickly, yes.
Sometimes the most valuable thing is a friend who will challenge something you said or thought, and that cuts through the knot for you. You have to look again.
And you have to be willing to hear the criticism or the idea or the offering and not be attached to how it makes you feel. That's why it's wonderful to do with someone you love and you know loves you back. You hear it differently than you do from a stranger. So it's a wonderful exercise. Could I finish with this?
No.
Okay.
You're done. Okay, well, we're coming to the end of the meeting, and we would like to remind everyone of our schedules on the desk and books and literature on the table. Now, these ideas need to be explored and discovered on our own, and we have to find the truth that lies within them for ourselves, because what we say up here, if you believe it without checking, testing, and verifying it, you might as well go out on the street. But we wouldn't send you there. Okay? But to do this, to keep these ideas alive and in the public realm, it takes a great effort, because this is a time of great materialism. And that the effort one puts forth in this period or in this age will come back sevenfold, fivefold, threefold, but it will come back multiplied, that effort towards spiritual things. So, in keeping with that, this lodge is entirely sustained through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money, and all are invited to participate. Meeting adjourned.